This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have one sponsor of the show, and that's Jam Software, and we'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, how's it going?
Good, good. We are our big fundraiser for school this week, so everybody is in kind of that mode. We have an online auction, then we have a live auction as well. So it's a lot of fun. We had a set of Sonos speakers on there that there was like a target in my mind that I was willing to bid, and it went above that, so I let them go.
Yeah, there's more of that in the shops if you want them.
Yeah, that's true. They were getting to where they were like the white and silver, and I really like the black and silver, so I wasn't going to pay like retail price for the color that I didn't love as much.
Yeah, so. So it's like bidding on a gold iPad.
True.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks like the event is in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, so that's the talk of the town is the new Apple event, which was initially rumored to be the 15th of March, and they've now pushed it back to, what is that, the 25th or something like that? Is that right?
Yeah, and that actually works out better for our schedule, because that's the week that you and I are going to skip a week of recording. So my wife is traveling that week, so it would be a little bit difficult to record with the kids. So that actually works out better for us. Anyways, I'm glad Apple is considering our schedules.
Yeah, they're building it around your holiday schedule, I'm sure.
Yep. True.
Yep. Hopefully they are building it around our deployment schedule, though, which would be very much appreciated, so we can keep our fingers crossed for that.
So you had some fun stuff happen this week, right?
Yeah, we got our first devices under device enrollment in the school, and it was intended that we bought two iPad minis, right? And partly this was looking towards the refresh, and we were doing a little bit of business with the Apple Store again, just to deal with a reseller who was quite good at doing the device enrollment program, as opposed to many of them who are not so great at it, particularly the one we bought our last devices from. And the intention was, I bought iPad minis because I thought, well, I'm not actually going to deploy these. I'm just going to use them for test devices and so on. So let's not spend so much money. And then we had a couple of new people started the school in between me putting the order in and me getting the devices. So the school has grown so much in the past really 4 months that I had to just deploy those devices basically straight away. So the learning curve went vertical at that point for me. But we got there in the end. So basically, just to kind of summarize what I saw with device enrollment from a beginner's point of view, was that it was insanely easy. I mean, it was the best deployment experience I've ever had with iOS. Basically, I turned them on. You go through the stage where you pick your language, you pick your region, connect them to Wi-Fi, and then basically the next panel that comes up says, would you like to take the Cedar School configuration? Yes, please. And then whatever steps I had configured were gone through, and that was me there. And the way that you configure that, of course, is in your NDM. So inside Casper, there's a thing called pre-stage enrollment, is what they call it in Casper. I think other NDMs have different terminology for it. And basically what that is that's the setup tab from Apple Configurator taken out and put inside your NDM. So what you can do in there is you can see things like, well, devices set up with this enrollment should be supervised, require NDM, and in the setup assistant, you should skip these panes or whatever. You can also put in there things like purchasing information. You can have device names. Basically, you paste in a list of names there, and each device that enrolls through that pre-stage enrollment will get the next name on the list. And you can allocate the devices to individual users if you want to, but it's not really clear to me why you'd want to do that for bulk devices. But the idea is, and this is kind of the clever bit, is that Your NDM knows about all the serial numbers in your orders. Yeah, that's what the device enrollment portal does. And then from there, what you can do is you can say, well, these devices, these serial numbers go into this enrollment, and these serial numbers go into that enrollment, and so on and so on. So one of the ways you could do that, actually, is you could set up an enrollment for each class set of devices. So you could have a basic enrollment, and then you can clone it in Casper. So that's one way that you could actually do the naming of the devices, is have one enrollment group for every class in your school, and then set it up so that the serial numbers are going in, that you allocate to each class, go into the right enrollment, and then you have a list of class names in there, and they just take one off of each, which I think could be quite cool. But the slight difficulty for rollout is that there's no way to say, well, which device gets which name. All you can do is say, here are the names, and whatever one comes first gets that name. So you might have to just sort of label them in alphabetical order and make sure you paste the names in alphabetical order, and that way you would know this device got that name and so on. But those are, that's my kind of beginner's experience with DEP so far, and crazy impressed with it. And I think between that and the stuff we're going to talk about today, Bradley, there is actually a realistic opportunity to do a zero-touch deployment here. I think this could be really cool.
And so what we're talking about today is the Apple ID strategy that your school's thinking through. And it's really important that you think through this prior to rolling out your devices. Failure here can create a lot of backpedaling that can take weeks, months, or honestly even years to recover from, because there's just no good way to fix it in mass. And so for me, I think like when you pick your strategy, I think you discuss that with your teachers and your staff. And so they at least understand, because a lot of them are going to be familiar with Apple IDs because they have them personally. Mm-hmm. But understand, help them understand like how it works and pull back the curtain to explain how everything's going to flow. And one of the things I've realized is parents see their teachers most often, and so they'll ask teachers questions most often. So we're not expecting your teachers to be like Apple ID experts, but just like if they can like answer a first line defense question, I think that's good, and it just creates a positive experience all around. It empowers your teachers, and your parents get their question answered. We've kind of gone through that with our online enrollment stuff. Like our teachers, I mean, a lot of the questions that parents ask, our teachers are able to answer because we really talked to them about it, and so they understood the process and why we were doing it and how all the information flows. And while I still have gotten a crap ton of questions since we have done it, I think it could be a lot worse if our teachers weren't able to answer a lot of questions as well. So yeah, I think this is just something you got to think through.
Yeah. I completely agree with you on the whole point about getting this right at the start, because this along with financing, I think are the two things that can kill a deployment. Possibly Wi-Fi is the third, because if you get this wrong, you end up in a scenario where either you're doing so much work during the school year just to keep it running, or you have put an insurmountable obstruction in the way of teaching and learning that your deployment becomes unpopular for that reason. And I think the kind of questions you're talking about giving people the answers to, Bradley, are questions like, can we download our own apps, for example? How do I download my own app? Do I need a password for this? What kind of password is it? Is it my personal password? Is it a password the school knows? Is it something else again? Do I have to ask somebody to get an app, or can I tell the kids just to install the app by themselves? And these are some of the questions that we kind of deal with all the time, because not so much teachers, but I see this more often with new parents or pupils who are new to the school, who don't really know the background of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. So they're asking me things like, can I pay you to put a game on my iPad for me? And this kind of thing we don't do, but other times, if it's like a free app or something to help with something you're doing at home, I'll maybe consider that kind of thing. So it's, these are the kind of questions you want to think about up front, and then maybe an FAQ document or something would work quite well there.
Yeah, something like, what's the difference between, our school Apple IDs and your personal ones, for example?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably worth talking, Bradley, a little bit about that. In the first case, why do you need an Apple ID? Right? What is this all about? And what is it you're expecting students to do on the device that can lead to the need to create an Apple ID? And of course, we started off not really using Apple IDs at all. I mean, when we were deploying apps through syncing with iTunes, there was no real Apple ID active on the device. Well, I suppose it was maybe whatever one was logged in iTunes on the Mac, but we weren't creating individual Apple IDs for all the devices in the school, for example. But even when we got Apple Configurator and volume purchase, you were able to just push apps onto devices over USB. But that was so unsatisfactory because it meant that you had to return the device to base in order to put a new app on. So that there was, you're talking about maybe like a maintenance window or something, or every Wednesday afternoon I'll take this class and Thursday afternoon I'll take that class. And somebody was spending a lot of time just plugging iPads into a Mac and sending apps over the wire or indeed updates over the wire to the device. So that was less than ideal. And then the next phase was VPP managed distribution. So why don't you tell us what that was all about?
And this was, when did this come out? Last year? It was year before
Managed distribution, we've been on it for at least 2 years, and I think it was available in the US before that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Two or three years.
So you'll see this hyphenated as like VPP-MD, and this would allow you to distribute apps over MDM and then also revoke them. And so what this solved was the problem of like, hey, I bought 50 copies of this app, and now I have to rebuy that app for every new student that needs it. And so once you just pushed out the app, you lost it. So with managed distribution, you could pull that app back. And I believe the users had 30 days to actually purchase the app, or then they would like kind of lose their data. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, you could basically take the installed instance of the app, and you could change its ownership by buying your own copy within the 30 days of the app being revoked from your Apple ID.
And this was like, I guess I don't know how this worked at Apple internally. On paper, this is an amazing feature. But that as soon as everybody has an Apple ID, and this is fine for enterprises or colleges, things like that, this is fine. But like the problem is if you have iPad deployments with students under the age of 13, there's really no easy way for them to get an Apple ID legally. And yeah. It was also just in some ways a weird licensing model because you were like assigning it to possibly a personal Apple ID.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the enterprise argument is kind of the point here, Bradley, because I kind of think that the idea, as I initially saw it described to me, was an employee rocks up with their own Apple ID, possibly a bring-your-own-iPhone scenario, and there's a way behind the curtain where Apple can sort of tell you what the Apple ID is but not tell you the Apple ID. And then you can assign apps to the Apple ID but not necessarily to the device. So it was kind of this way in which, my organization would connect to my employee's Apple ID in Apple's cloud, but I wouldn't really see the details of either of that. But then as kind of a result of having assigned that, it would then get installed on whatever devices the user wanted to install on, which is fine if you're an adult and you can do that all yourself. But then, like you said, you came to this problem with kids. And the official line from Apple was, in order to manage distribution, you need to have Apple IDs for everybody. The schools would say, right, okay, I'm going to make 500 Apple IDs. Apple, oh, sorry, you can't make 500 Apple IDs because they have to all be made personally. At which point, schools just, minds exploded. Or they wrote a script to do it and discovered a whitelisting in the App Store. But, of course, as a result of that, that was how Apple came to create the Apple ID for Students program, which basically got the iTunes radio treatment, which was that it shipped in the US, didn't work very well, and then it never shipped in any other country. So it was never available outside of the US. And the idea with that was that Apple created a system where schools could kind of send out a request to a parent, that the parent would then complete a permissions flow, if you like, through Apple's web pages, where they would agree to various terms and conditions. And then that would be reported back to the school electronically that the parent had done that. But the problem was that parents were really bad at this, basically. And this is my understanding from most US schools that had done it, was that completion rates were very low or very slow. And schools had to do a ton of chasing up people who hadn't created an Apple ID and so on. And of course, you can't really start that until the first day of term, so because you don't know who's going to be there that day. And this could delay the point at which everybody's got an iPad that works for weeks, or possibly in some cases I've heard even months. So the Apple ID for students wasn't a great model. But the idea was that what Apple wanted there was they wanted every student to have a full working Apple ID. And their lawyers said, we need to have these permissions from the parents as well. And this was a convoluted way of getting to the point where everybody agreed that enough permission had been given that the student could have an Apple ID for themselves. And that's changing now. We'll talk about that in a little minute.
Yeah, going back to our online enrollment program, there's been some various quirks inside of that that have required me to do some like manual intervention. So Here's an example of some frustration I've had. If a payment fails for like the re-enrollment fee, mm-hmm. I don't get a notice. Neither does the parent. I basically have to run a financial audit report and then manually contact those folks to write us a check. I've been going back and forth with RenoWeb's online enrollment people, and we'll do a whole show in a few after this deployment series about that. I've got a lot of things to say. But my comment to the people at RenWeb was, there are too many things that require me to do manual intervention. And that's really what the Apple IDs for Students program was. No matter how involved your parents are, although, like, you know, from our perspective, everything at school is our life because that's all we do. But even I've even figured out, even as a parent of a student in our school, like, there's just things that I miss because I'm busy with my job and my other kids and things like that. And so what is like top of mind for you? And for an IT administrator who is managing the Apple ID for Students program, that's all they thought about that summer. But no parent did. Like, they were worried about vacations. They were worried about this, that, and the other. And it's one of those things where anytime you're relying on your entire parent body to do something,
it's going to fail.
I mean, it's just going to fail. And, you know, we've really had enough time. I mean, we've had a great re-enrollment season so far, and a great percentage of it has been higher. We're having a higher early re-enrollment than we ever have been. I think it's because it's online. But there are still parents who, like, you know, you send out emails telling them what to do, and they just, like, you know, they're busy that day, they delete it, and then they're like, we don't know how to do this process. And so I almost could have said from the beginning that's going to be a tough program to sell. And I have never talked to a school that actually did it. Have you?
If you remember Patrick Fogarty, who was on the show maybe about a year ago,
yeah,
he did it with his school district at one point. He said it was a complete nightmare. It was just way too difficult. The completion rates were not what they needed to be. I mean, to do a whole school one-to-one, you need a completion rate of 100%, and you need it really quickly. Like, you need it by the first 2 days of term, you know, so that you can get your devices up and running, classes get settled down, people are actually using them. Whereas with Apple ID for Students, you ended up, you know, 40% of your class had a working Apple ID on day one. Next day, you were maybe up to 45%, but you sort of asymptotically approached 100%. Like, you never, ever really got to the point where every single person in the school reliably had a working Apple ID. So there's a good reason why they've gone to this managed Apple ID situation. But in the meantime, Bradley, Apple ID kind of grew in importance, at least for secondary schools, because they brought along device assignment for apps, which we'll talk about in a little minute. But at the same time, that took away the requirement to have an Apple ID just to get apps. But then iTunes U comes along, and iTunes U 3 with the whole gradebook and assignments and stuff like that. And that completely and totally depends on Apple ID. Because if you don't have an Apple ID, you can't even sign in to enroll in a course. So every student who takes a course through iTunes U has to have a working Apple ID. And in some ways, as Apple ID has reduced in importance for getting apps, it has increased in importance for getting access to services. So you get things like, of course, iCloud backup, but most importantly for schools, I think access to iTunes U. And this is why almost no primary schools are using Apple ID, using iTunes U, because they can't get Apple IDs for their kids and they can't enroll them in courses and so on. So it's the role of the Apple ID is changing, but it's still something that's very important to have for certain areas.
Well, imagine if you were deploying Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And to a school that didn't use Google Apps. That's almost the reverse. It's almost how it's kind of been for iPad deployments. It's a real challenge. And one of the simple aspects of Chromebooks is, if you're already using Google Apps, you already have your login mechanism. And so that's what made it difficult. You had, you know, although we have reduced, as you said, reduced the reliance for app distribution, in some ways it's even more important day to day because of things that use iCloud login, iCloud Drive, iCloud backup. You know, so much more of the iPad experience is built around that Apple ID. So it's almost even more important today.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we end up in this situation where we have this thing coming out with iOS 9.3 called Managed Apple ID. And this is basically Apple finally doing what they should have done all that time ago, which is do the same thing as Google Docs, right? Which is, give me a portal where I can upload a CSV that I generate however I want to generate, that will create in 2 seconds all the Apple IDs that I need, that are all completely working and do everything I need them to do. And I don't need to depend on anybody else to get this job done. And that's what we've wanted for years, and that's what Apple kind of balked at giving us. And the thing you have to understand about managed Apple ID is that Apple ID for students was an attempt to close all the legal loopholes such that students could get a full working Apple ID. That failed. And as a result, what we now have is managed Apple ID, but a managed Apple ID is a lesser Apple ID than one that you would create either through students, Apple ID for students, or, you know, one that you make on the customer storefront. And it's almost as if somebody at Apple sat down with the team of lawyers and they said, look, what do I have to give up in terms of functionality for me to not have to ask the parents to agree to the kids having this Apple ID? And the lawyers have sat down and they said, well, you can't have this and you can't have that and you can't have access to the App Store and so on. So a managed Apple ID can do less. It can participate less in the Apple ecosystem, because if you have a managed Apple ID, you're not allowed to buy things from the store, for example. You've got to get all your apps through MDM. And that's something that I don't know if people have kind of clocked, is that a managed Apple ID is less capable than a normal Apple ID. In some ways, it may be more capable. And this is my conviction that there will be something happening around iCloud storage space for managed Apple IDs. Don't know if you've had this sense, Bradley. I know you're going to an event quite soon and you can report back to us on this one as well. But I've been talking to people at Apple about it and nobody has confirmed to me that this is going to happen. But let's just say they started denying it in a different way, if you know what I mean. And the only line that's been said to me, and this is how I know it's happening, right, is because people have said to me the same line over and over again in different conversations, which is there will be heavy reliance on iCloud in talking about shared the context of shared iPad, right? And different people have said this exact phrase to me at different times, which is how I know that they've been given something to say to people who ask this question. So I'm fairly confident that something's going to happen with that. But in terms of all the features that you might want from an Apple ID, a managed Apple ID is missing some of them. And that's important just to bear in mind as we go through.
Yeah. And again, if you, for whatever reason, need a full Apple ID, you don't need to use managed Apple IDs.
Yeah, you don't have to use them for sure. Although it will be interesting, and I don't have all the details yet about like what exactly are the differences between a normal Apple ID and a managed one. There are some documents about what a managed Apple ID can't do, but then the next question is there anything it can do that a normal Apple ID can't do? And I mean, do you have to have a managed ID to participate in shared iPad, for example? That's a question that I don't know the answer to yet.
Yeah, I need to. Yeah, I have an event on Tuesday, so I need to like get a list of questions that maybe I can try to get answers to.
Yeah, I will send you my list. there's plenty of them. You could take up the whole session just yourself.
Why don't we take a moment and thank our sponsor for tonight? It's the fine folks at Jamp Software. You guys know Jamp. If you need a mobile device management system for your school, Jamp is the one you want to go with. We Fraser and I both use them. They have enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in your school, Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs. They have a neat app for teachers that they can run on their iPad called Casper Focus that allows teachers to take control of their classroom deployment. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain a student's attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay. Learn more about the Casper Suite, Casper Focus, and Jamp Software at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com.
Okay, Bradley, so why don't we talk a little bit about app deployment?
Yeah, so again, this is something that really has been in flux over the years. This has really changed. Seems like it's changed every other year. So there are two major models that you can do today. First is user-based. And when we say user-based, this is Apple ID-based. And the second is device-based. So this is specific to the iPad. As we mentioned before, user-based is really like kind of where you would use VPP managed distribution. The app is assigned to an Apple ID and gets installed on the device. So correct me if I'm wrong, if in this model, people can install it on more than one device.
Yeah, that's correct. This is kind of for the scenario where one person might potentially have multiple iOS devices. Let's say a business who deploy iPads, and the people might have a kind of bring your own iPhone strategy for the business. You're connecting the app to the Apple ID, and as a consequence of that, the app may be installed on a device or multiple devices. It behaves exactly as if you had bought it yourself. So yeah, it's for multiple devices.
And again, I can see this being really big in the enterprise where employees might have a personal phone and a company deployed iPad, and they want to use this company app on it. So in user-based assignments, the app is assigned to Apple ID exactly as if you'd bought it yourself. So it appears in the purchase tab, and it updates just as any other app. You don't really know you don't technically own it. I mean, you do, but it can be taken back from you. It can be re-downloaded. Now, device-based app assignment is new with iOS 9.0, I believe. And that's where the app is assigned specifically to an individual device. Now, is this based on like the serial number or the UDID, I imagine?
I don't know exactly how it's implemented under the hood, but the effect is that the app is pushed to or made available to only that device and not to all the devices that the user might have. So the way it looks in Casper is that you, when you do what they call a scope in Casper, which is which people or devices these things are being assigned to, whether configuration profiles or apps, what you see is this app is going to be assigned to a device group, and it's the devices in there that are enrolled in MDM, and they get pushed to that app. And you're still charged for a license with your volume purchase. It's not like it's working around volume purchase. You still have to have enough licenses for the devices you're sending it to. But one of the things that they recommend, Jam Software recommend, is not to mix the two models in your MDM. So you're either doing device-based assignment or you're doing user-based assignment, at least for the same groups of kids. I mean, I can imagine doing user-based assignment for staff and device-based assignment for students, possibly. But try not to mix the two if you can avoid it, because it can cause confusion if you've got multiple administrators, for example.
Now, one of the things that was different about device-based app assignment, which was a huge win for schools, was it was a silent install, where on the Apple ID-based or the user-based app assignment, they had to type in their Apple ID to basically accept that. So it wasn't a silent install, correct?
Yes. There was a way to do a silent install with user-based, but you had to basically do a user assignment and then a device assignment in order to push the app to the device. So it was possible to kind of do both at the same time, but it wasn't. It was like double the work to deploy an app. And this changed a little bit, I think, in iOS 8, because we have individual Apple IDs for every iPad in the school, but only the senior kids know the password for their own Apple ID. So what for the younger kids, it used to be that I would just do a user-based assignment, and then as a consequence of having the automatically install new app setting turned on, the app would be installed on the device. That was iOS 7 behavior, and I'm pretty sure that changed in iOS 8. So what would happen is a user-based assignment app would go into the purchase tab, but the user had to manually go into the app store, go into purchase, and then tap the download button. And then at some point later on, Apple changed it so that if you had any kind of app restriction installed on the device, like age restriction, you had to put in the Apple ID password in order to install any app. So it became a situation, and this is the situation we're in now for younger users, where I have to assign the app to the user, and then I have to go to their iPad and type in the secret password for the younger kids' Apple IDs that we're not telling them. And so it's become a little bit difficult again. And this is one of the reasons why we're thinking about moving away from user-based assignment towards pure device assignment for our next deployment.
I think I probably will as well for our methods and our setup, but I think, as we always say, this is to help you decide what's best for your school and under your context, because there are caveats all around.
Yeah. One of the things about device-based assignment is I think I haven't absolutely tested this, so this is just with a pinch of salt. But I think if the user deletes the app from the device, they have to have it reinstalled from MDM. Like it won't be in their purchase tab because it's not assigned to their Apple ID. There may not be an app, they won't be signed into an Apple ID in the store on the device anyway. So if you're doing device-based assignment, there has to be a way for the MDM to re-push an app to the user's iPad. And in the Casper suite, I think the way you would do that is through the self-service app that they install when you enroll a device in Casper. And the self-service is kind of like a little kind of private app store portal where you can go and request the MDM to send things to your device. So I think for Casper users, that might not be so difficult. But if your MDM doesn't provide a service like that, it might be a little trickier.
Well, and I'm assuming that if a user deletes a paid app, you would get the license back, right?
That's something to test. I actually don't know the answer to that. But
I mean, yeah, if it doesn't, we will be turning off the ability to delete apps really quick.
Well, that was what I was going to say. Is I suspect that what would happen is if the app was still assigned to the device in your MDM, you would still be getting charged for a license for that, even if the app wasn't actually installed in the device. So you could unscope it from the device and get the license back and use it somewhere else. But the second thing is because in some ways this we're looking at younger users for this maybe, using a configuration profile to prevent people deleting apps might be the right thing to do in that situation.
Well, even if it's like, even if obviously you get the license back and whatnot, just the frustration of getting an email from a teacher, hey, you know, Johnny Sue deleted their app, or someone got a hold of Johnny Sue's iPad and deleted half their apps. Can you help?
Yeah, you want to avoid that as much as possible. So either use something like Casper where the user can reinstall the app by themselves, or just push out a configuration profile that prevents people from doing it. And sometimes the way I've done this situation with other restrictions that I sometimes need to take off for debugging purposes is that most MDMs, I think, have a way to kind of scope a profile to all your devices, but then add in exclusions, like blacklist certain people from not getting that. So for example, I do this with, we have a configuration profile to require a password on the device, and I exclude our 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds from having to have that profile installed. So if I need to give somebody back a capability, I'll just insert them into the exclusion list temporarily, do whatever I need to do, and then take them back out of the exclusion list. And it's a whole lot easier than trying to, you know, fiddle with your groups just to take somebody out of a group just to remove one configuration profile temporarily for them.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So let's see, we're right on the notes here.
Which model to use? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing about device space is, depending on what you're planning to do with your iPads, you're still going to need Apple IDs. So this is not going to get around not having to deal with Apple IDs or even managed Apple IDs if you want to use things like iTunes U. And yeah, for certainly a middle school and up deployment, they're going to need Apple IDs for what you're going to do. You might get away with it with a primary deployment, depending on what apps you use and how you're using them in the classroom. But middle school and up, you're just going to need one. But I would still say, for if someone asked me my opinion without understanding their context, I would say device-based app assignment seems to be the simplest method.
Yeah, I think the way I would look at it is, it's whether or not you control the hardware in the deployment. Right? So in a situation where, say, your school's doing a bring-your-own-iPad policy, I mean, that's what some bring-your-own-device strategies sort of boil down to, is you choose the iPad, you bring the iPad. Or if you're in a situation where the user might have multiple devices, one of which might not be yours, the organization's, I mean, then user-based assignment might be the right thing to do, because as long as you bring an Apple ID, I can give you the apps you need. Whereas if you control the entire stack, like I do in my school, where I control the MDM server, the VPP account, the exact hardware that goes to the exact user, and I'm only really taking responsibility for that one device. I don't care whether these kids get these apps on their personal phones, because I'm providing them the device I want them to use for work. Then device-based deployment of apps, I would say, is probably the more straightforward way to go. And it makes it a little bit easier when you're not able to, or when you don't want to create Apple IDs. So another scenario where that might be useful is, say, the device is not actually personalized for work, such as it's like a point of sale terminal. You know, you're putting it in your Square reader or something like that at the till, or you're giving it to a salesperson, they'll log in through a SaaS app that they're going to work in for the whole day, or something like that, where it's not, the person's not getting the whole iOS experience, they're just doing one app on the device, something like that. Or if it's like a kiosk in a museum or something, a visitor guide that you give out to people, they're not really personal devices, they're just utility devices for one particular scenario. Those could all be good reasons to go device-based.
So we got two types of app models. And gosh, this does sound like it's getting a little bit confusing, but it's not. So we got two types of apps.
It's a 2x3, right?
Yeah. Yep. So you've got user-based and device-based, and so you kind of pick that first. Now, we have three types of Apple ID models you have to think through. And this is, again, we're going to assume that Manage Apple IDs is ready for your next deployment. have no reason to think it wouldn't be, but we're just, it's not out today, but we will assume it is. So the first type of model is a personal Apple ID, and the challenge here is going to be getting them like created. If you've got, you know, if you're like at a university, probably not a huge problem. They probably already got Apple IDs. But if you're like an even high school, it could be difficult. iTunes U will be a big challenge. Then you have to also understand like whose Apple ID they're using. Is it like their parents' account? I mean, because that's not really what we're looking. We're not looking to, like, for their parents' account to be like signed into iTunes U.
Yep, and this gets weird fast, because when I started doing volume purchase a couple of years ago, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if like kids who've already got an Apple ID can just like bring their own Apple ID and I can give them apps and they can use them wherever. But in fact, I honestly suspect that the number of kids who have ever installed an app that I gave them on their personal device is probably about 1 or 2%, whereas there are not a lot, but there are one or two kids that I know of who, like, they told me, yeah, I've got my own Apple ID, I've totally got my own Apple ID, and then we set it up, and then a week later I discovered it was actually their parents' Apple ID. So I look in my iTunes U roster, and there's one kid who's got their mother's name showed up in my Apple ID, my list of Apple IDs, and not their name, right? So it's stuff like that, and then you've got concerns about things like, are the parents' messages syncing onto the pupils' iPads, or are their photos, even worse, are their photos syncing onto the kids' iPads and they don't know about it? I mean, you can imagine how that could go badly wrong very, very easily, particularly if some other pupil gets access to that young person's iPad and it has pictures on there that belong to the parents and not to the even to the pupil whose iPad it is as well. So I'm moving away from that, and I'm no longer offering people, well, tell me if you've got an Apple ID or not, because they don't actually know, right? They know that they can get apps, but they don't know whether it's actually their account sometimes or a parent's account. And I'm not talking about young children, I'm talking about secondary school kids as well. They promised me they had their own Apple ID, but it wasn't their own. It was, you know, a parent's or something like that. So I'm trying to avoid that now, and I'm just creating Apple IDs for those kids when they come along.
I just don't see a reason for, knowing what's coming out with managed Apple IDs, I just don't see a reason to have a bring your own Apple ID program anymore.
No, certainly not below university level, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, university, certainly. Secondly, you know, this is not going to be, well, I'll say it, then we'll talk about it. Managed Apple ID, which is what you had mentioned before, it's where you have to get your IP address whitelisted from Apple. You have to, you know, use a Keyboard Maestro thing. You're basically doing this manually. I mean, you're creating a bunch of manual. And you did this a few years ago, did you not?
Yeah, this was how I got into you doing managed distribution, was that I created a Keyboard Maestro script that would basically hit tab and type for me and hit return through the three or four panes in iTunes that you had to go through to create an Apple ID. And that was fine as long as once I got my IP address whitelisted. But this is obviously kind of going away, right? And there was a scalability limit to this. I mean, I know schools who used my Keyboard Maestro script and were able to make like 500 plus Apple IDs, and that was fine. Nobody emailed and asked me to share it with you, because I don't have it anymore, because I'm obviously not using a Mac, so I didn't bother backing that up. But basically, it was just, you know, tab, type, tab, type, tab, type, all the way through the form. You could make something like that yourself. And with the official managed Apple ID system, this is obviously going away, and it has so many downsides to it, mainly rate limiting and also just the fragility of it and the complexity of it, that it's not going to be a thing that people do in the future, I don't think, unless you really need to work around or skirt around the limitations of managed Apple IDs.
And then finally, the thing that I would probably recommend for most high school and below schools is managed Apple IDs, and that is coming in 9.3, as we said. This is probably your best strategy going forward, especially if your student information system will do the syncing, but if not, I still think it's worth it, because what are your alternatives? And you know, again, hopefully getting a little bit of a preview about this next week. If anybody has any questions they want me to specifically try to get answers to, send me a message on Twitter or shoot me an email. You can get in touch on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and then send me a message on my blog, chambersdaily.com. And I'll be glad to try to get this answered for you. And if I do get some of them answered, we can talk about them on the show. So even though managed Apple ID is the ideal way to handle your Apple ID setup, and again, this is not for purchasing. This is for things like iTunes U, iCloud backups. I think the best model for a managed one-to-one school is going to be a managed Apple ID with device-based app assignment.
Yeah, I'm very much considering that that's where I'm going with the next deployment. Even though I've got a bunch of Apple IDs, I will probably just delete them or throw them away or whatever I need to do to get rid of them and switch everybody to having a managed Apple ID. Or at least, well, not everybody, because they're the older kids, you've got their own password for their Apple ID. I've already used their email addresses as their Apple ID, so I doubt I'm going to be able to make another managed Apple ID with the same email address. But for the younger kids who don't have named Apple IDs, like their email addresses haven't been used as Apple IDs, I will probably just go through the process of creating an Apple ID for each one of those kids that I can manage for them as they go through, and then eventually give it away to them, because you can disown an Apple ID later on. As an admin, you can turn it, I think you can turn it into like a full Apple ID when the kids are 16 or 18 or whatever it is, or whenever they leave school. So
I imagine there's no reversing of that once you let it go. You've set it free.
There's no reversing, and there's also no adoption as well. So you can't take an existing consumer Apple ID and turn it into a managed Apple ID. That's not going to be allowed. So I'm not going to be able to adopt the older kids in the school back into being managed Apple IDs when they're already more powerful than that, if you like. So if you are a bring your own iOS device school or a university or a business or some such, then probably asking your adult users to personally create their own Apple ID and bring that along, and then doing user-based assignment might be the better way to go in that situation. Although you still have to bear in mind the possibility that there are some people who will not either, they will simply not have access to making an Apple ID. Can you make them on the web now? I've always made them through iTunes. I'm not sure.
I think you can. Manage Apple ID. I think it's manageappleid.apple.com.
Okay, so you could potentially go there and make at least a basic Apple ID, because there's always been two stages to that. There's like making the Apple ID, and then there's making it work with buying stuff through the store, and that's where you've got to provide name and address and payment method and so on. So dealing with those situations might be tricky, but it's probably not insurmountable if you're dealing with adults, whereas in schools, I think managed Apple ID is definitely going to be the way to go.
Yep, so lots of fun here. This is a fun year to be doing a refresh, because it's just a good year. It's a good year for
all
us.
The toys, yeah.
So, again, if you've got any questions that you want to try to get me the answer next week, get in touch with me. I go on Tuesday, and the show will be out on Monday. So hopefully you listened early. If you're on Twitter, use the hashtag Deploy16 to talk about the show or ask us any questions that you want covered. You can find all of our notes and links to the show at outofschool.net. It would love if you share the show with friends, colleagues. If you're on a listserv somewhere and the show's helped you, we'd appreciate you sharing that. You can contact me, as I mentioned, on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and on the web at chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web. And, of course, thanks also to our Patreon supporters. If you want to join them in supporting the show directly with a monthly donation, you can do that at patreon.com/out of school. And we'd love to have your support there, too.
Have a good week, everybody.